RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Alwyn Paul is an academic advisor and prominent voice in the Partnership Schools movement. He is a highly educated, experienced and motivated teacher with a desire to help all children reach their full potential in all areas, academically, socially, physically and emotionally. Throughout his extensive teaching career and in his study, he has sought the best ways to teach and learn. And if Alwyn's name is familiar to you, he's been on with Cam, he's been on with Peter Williams and Rodney Hyde. And of course, on this particular program, we've talked to education with Dr. Michael Johnston and Dr. Oliver Hartwich from the New Zealand Initiative. Recently, we had Auckland Grammar School headmaster Tim O'Connor on, and they've all opined on the state of our education system. So it's good to have Alwyn on, and we're going to talk about the opportunities for charter schools in New Zealand. Alwyn, thanks for coming on RCR Breakfast. Nice to have you.
My pleasure.
Okay, I'm looking at a Substack that you posted up on the 7th of June, which is, it's pretty hard-hitting. The huge charter school need and opportunity in New Zealand, that's the heading. But basically, you're saying that the state education sector in New Zealand, in fact, you say it very clearly, is a vast and failed experiment. It's a bit of a shocker, isn't it?
It is. I mean, in small part, that's a response to the way that the teacher unions are going about opposing charter schools this time, where, you know, they've come out with it's a failed experiment, and then they've come out with this $153 million spent over 4 years could fund 700 teacher aides, which, of course, is a very mythical sort of binary choice thing. You could get $153 million out of saving on employment in the ministry without anyone sneezing, let alone catching a cold. But those are the two ways that they've sort of gone about opposing it. And to me, there's an ongoing sadness in that, because the last time charter schools were a part of our system, the PPTA, the secondary union, and the NZEI, the primary teachers union, they spent the best part of 5 years opposing 11 to 12 small schools. And I was a member of the PPTA for about 3 months when I started teaching, where I realised that my money was better saved. If I was a sub-paying member, I'd be really disappointed in that, because there are so many other things that they could have done and could be angling towards now to actually improve our system for the 2,500 schools that will remain as state schools after the next sort of 4 to 5 years.
Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Why such opposition, Alwyn? Because in the end, it's about kids, isn't it? It's not about union members and teachers and politics. It's about kids.
It should be. But I think these unions have, over a long period of time, operated pretty much without real questions being asked about what they achieve. Their role, and I just think they should be honest about it, so I don't particularly have a problem with it, but their role is to represent their members. And so stop pretending that by, you know, opposing a number of schools that are doing innovative and good things, that you are doing something to save the New Zealand system. I mean, the New Zealand system is archaic in many ways, and far too many children, and particularly those children that we should be concerned about, are not getting a good quality education. And it has a huge impact on everybody. I mean, I saw a stat today saying that we're now something like 20% below Australia on per capita gross domestic product. That's a really significant amount. But if we've got a great big pool of unskilled labour that employers can pay the minimum wage to, and if someone doesn't like it, well, they've got a queue to bring along. And those kids are often locked and loaded for life. in that type of job. So if we actually want a high-value economy where people can have opportunities, we need to improve our system for the kids who are leaving with nothing, which is, for instance, a quarter of all Māori children leaving school.
Yeah. Yes. Think about that. All right, just a bit of history for us. Some of us have heard the term charter school and kind of have in our mind a view of what it might be, but what is the difference between a charter school and, let's say, your average state primary school? Maybe there's not much difference, maybe there is. And kind of what is the quick broad brush history of charter schools? It's been a recent phenomenon in New Zealand, but they've been around in other countries for a long time, haven't they? I'm thinking of the States.
So in the US, they have been around for a while. Like, they continue to grow. There are some incredibly good operators who seek out to operate. So I've visited schools in inner city New York. The queues of parents to try and get their children into those schools is absolutely phenomenal. But at the same stage, it's a bit tragic because many of them are not getting that opportunity. Stanford University have an ongoing study, and I think I mentioned it in that Substack, where even on average, they're now seeing significant better results for charter schools than for your public school. In Britain, over half of the secondary schools are now what they call academies, which is effectively a charter school. They are a relatively, at the moment, and I think they'll tend to stay that way in New Zealand, but a small public-private partnership where a government-appointed body evaluates applications and says, yes, these people have got the qualities and the experience to run a school. It's likely to look a little bit different than, I guess, the long-term state school situation. So the model that I write tends to be a middle school model, where if I'm establishing schools in this round, we look to have a split day, so an academic morning and an arts and activities-based afternoon. I write a particular curriculum, which is based on the New Zealand curriculum but above, which has subjects taught but also has co-curricular projects that the children do throughout the year. We have 15 in a class, and some of the unionist people get a bit obnoxious about that, saying, well, if everyone was funded that way, we are funded that way. We use our funding differently. And actually, most of those choices are available to state schools. There's no reason that they can't provide uniform stationery and IT and take a tremendous amount of weight off parents in February and generate a lot of goodwill. So it's not, and obviously some details have come out yet, but it looks as if this time around some of the evaluation processes will be improved in that I think that the ministry won't be directly involved as a sort of major body, but there will be a subunit because it's very difficult dealing with a bureaucracy that's got, 4,500 people in it, and you never know who you're talking to. You never know when your message has got through. They're not particularly good at being timely. So if you want a decision within the next week, it's likely 3 months away.
Wow. Okay.
And we, at schools that get authorised, they do have a range of choices. I guess, again, to the teacher union's distaste, when I was involved last time, we paid our staff about 5% above state. We had other benefits for them, such as life insurance and some health insurances and things like that. When Hipkins brought them back into the state system, we had to effectively pay our teachers less and couldn't provide those.
No, I didn't hear about that at the time.
Benefits. No.
No, I can recall.
The kids love it. We have very few discipline problems. The attendance has always been very good. And those things make a huge difference.
How come such a difference then, Alwyn? Because, you know, that was not the basics. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of knowledge and experience and know-how that goes into creating these the opportunities for the kids. But surely, you know, educating people, it's nothing new. It's been around for a long time. We've probably been through all sorts of fads and things through the years. How come it's better? I mean, there's the smaller class size. I mean, I picked up on that. But the way you break down the day, the curriculum, the attitude of the teachers, because you're dealing with potentially some hard kids, right?
Oh, yeah. And I've always loved that because that's most satisfying. I got a really neat email today from a kid. Well, he's not a kid now. He's on his way to a master's, just saying, hey, I came to Mount Hobson, which was our small private school, basically had no idea what I was doing, didn't think I was capable, and you made the difference to me by introducing me to a lot of other people who were kind of like-minded. And so a part of it is giving children a sense that they actually belong in the world and that they have got abilities that they can develop. And a lot of our state schools are still more filtering systems than teaching systems. And one story that I've always reflected on is I went to a large state school when we were running Mount Hobson and looking at these new schools. And I went to the head of science and I said, look, I just want to make sure I'm getting everything right. What do you do in year 9 and 10 to make sure, you know, your kids are really coming up and you're learning? And he said, oh, look, Alwyn, we're a big school. All we try and work out in year 9 and 10 is who can from who can't.
Oh, now, really? Okay.
There's no neuroscience behind that at all. Everything we've learned in the last 25 years talks about the plasticity of the mind. That, and so one of the most basic things that a good teacher, and there are very good teachers in state schools, but that a good teacher will do is they will look at their class and they will believe for the kids in their class that don't believe for themselves, and they will keep going until a kid picks up on that messaging. And I think that if you say in a school situation where maybe a third of your staff believe that, and the other two thirds are ingrained with this kind of, oh, I've got some low ability students, and, you know, Johnny's as thick as two short planks, and the best thing we can do for him is teach him to dig a hole, and all of that kind of stuff, then you're going to be up against this frustration. And in those schools, you see a lot of really differentiated reports where a child's doing extremely well in one person's class and, you know, basically taking up a space in another person's class. And I always think that that is the teacher's responsibility. You want the kids on side, you want the parents on side, but that's the reason why you teach.
But that's why they get into it, right? So.
Yeah.
So what's missing, because I was going to ask you about that, what motivates someone to be a teacher if they're not really committed, like me sitting here wanting to do something else? I mean, you know, why would I do that?
Exactly. So we've let a lot of these things kind of creep up on us. One is, I don't know if you saw the NZ Institute of Economic Research survey where they found that something like 20 to 25% of new primary school teachers couldn't do level one math, science, or English.
We'd heard
now,
that.
That should just never have been the case. There should have been a stock standard hard line that you need to have level one math, English, and a science to be considered for primary school teaching, with a strong preference for level two. And so you're then in a situation where everyone who's standing in front of a primary school class at least has adequate knowledge in those subject areas. But we have a lifelong education system. So in terms of what the unions can do, start proposing some good things. So start proposing that every primary school teacher who doesn't have those qualifications enrolls with Takura and gets them.
Because trains up, yeah.
It's not that difficult. Hmm. And so therefore you're not going to have primary school teachers saying, well, yeah, I'm a bit scared of teaching maths because I don't know it myself. And that's a terrible thing. And it's easy to fix. The other thing is when you get your funding in bulk. So there was an MP in the last Labor government, Angela Roberts, who was the former head of the president of the PPTA.
Yep, I remember her. Yep.
And when she was asked about why, for instance, South Auckland Middle School was doing well, she said, well, of course they're going to do well. They're bulk funded. And I heard her say it, and I thought, well, hang on. Because the PPTA, one of the things they're most proud about
is scuttling
that they defeated bulk funding as an option for secondary schools in New Zealand. And it provides amazing flexibility. So a huge handbrake on our schools is not only the qualifications that teachers are bringing in, but that no principal can incentivize teaching in their school to any significant degree. So I think if you're a graduate high school teacher and you've got the choice between going to a Rangitoto, a Macleans, a Westlake Girls, something like that, or a Papakura High School, they're not the same job.
Why were they so against bulk? Because I remember that was very controversial. Yeah. Because in any other sector, you know, meritocracy is rewarded, right? And you get the best, and no one ever says a thing about it. But yet in this area, everyone has to be cookie cutter the same. Is that a union thing, or is that what I've heard teachers say? Well, you know, we're all in this together, and, you know, we're all the same, and no one can be sort of, there's no rock stars, let's say. So why is such an effort to suppress that? Because it seems logical, sensible.
I think it's their power base, and they are the people who get to negotiate the employment contract. So the more people they have as members, the more power it looks like they've got. I thought it was appalling that the day after the charter schools were announced to be a part of the budget, the teachers in Dunedin and Queenstown went on strike. Why there? Well, Chris Abercrombie's the president of the PPTA. Happens to live in Dunedin, so he obviously got on the phone and got a few people walking off the job. So the answer to a few more charter schools starting up is to deny kids education the first day they possibly can. And it's just, I just think they've got to go back and have a bit of a look at what they're achieving. And so if you are a principal in, say, geographically isolated area school, if you're in a what we now call a high equity index school, if you're in a school where it's either really expensive to live close or you've got to travel a lot, there's nothing principals can really do about that. I went to Teachers College, and I really appreciate you making me sound really old at the start. But I think back in about 1990 down in Christchurch, and they'd have a day. We had ridiculous rules then, like a principal could not offer you a job until, I think, October the 14th. And so it would come out on the October the 1st Gazette. I might be 2 weeks out here, but the principle's the same. And you could put your applications in, but they couldn't offer you a job until 9 o'clock on that next morning. So they have all these sort of bizarre behind-the-back type things. You'd have teachers, principals turning up to Teachers College in Christchurch with boots full of beer to try and incentivize young people. Here's a crate of beer. I don't mind if you don't come and work for me, but just keep in mind the sort of things I'm prepared to do. It's great, you know?
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
And so you had all of this kind of thing. There are still some ways for principals to kind of get around it, but their hands are really tight. And so you have teachers. And if you start in a school under the current system that's not seen to be a flash school, and you teach there for 3 or 4 years, then you're quite hamstrung for where you can go next, which is discouraging.
I'm sure many teachers would be interested in working in charter schools, wouldn't they? Because they'd know that if they were good, that there's a great opportunity for them there.
Yeah, they have to be good. In those first 5 years, there was a couple of teachers that didn't front that well and didn't last that long. You got a bit more freedom to move people on, which is helpful. And you do it humanely.
Yeah.
You don't take them out the back and shoot them.
Bike sheds. Do they still have them? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the odd bike rack. It's not quite the same. But you want good teachers, of course. Everyone does. But teachers can also look at these models and go, wow, 15 kids in a class. What a dream. And a really innovative curriculum. And they're paying me a bit more. This sounds like something I might be into. Plus, they're working successfully with kids who weren't otherwise succeeding. That's why I became a teacher in the first place. I'm not short on inquiries at the moment for people who might like to work in new schools.
Given the worry of the kids not turning up to school, the you mentioned NZC, what is it? I can only think of school C and UE.
Yeah, that one. NCEA, yeah.
That's the one. And all that other, stuff that's not performing well. Do you think, obviously, there's maybe a fear in the, traditional education sector that if charter schools become a thing, then they're a threat. Can you operate a charter school system at the scale of a national education system? Is it possible? And to keep, the magic?
I think so. So the model I wrote works in units of 60. So beginning, say, South Auckland Middle School, we began that with two and then added a third unit of 60. They have had approximately 100 each year on their wait list. If the ministry had allowed them to expand, my guess is at the moment they would be with, say, six units of 60. And so you're preserving the integrity of the model by, even though it appears bigger, you've got the same units of delivery. And also, at the time, I'm not sure where they're at with this now, but we put in place really rigorous assessments that could tell us which teachers had their kids moving ahead more quickly. And then we could do professional development around that. And you just say, look, why is this happening in this person's class? What can we shift into the other class? What's their secret? Because there are some teachers who they'll be well prepared, they'll get all their resources organized, but they'll also just have kind of a spark or something that they do in their approach that gives the kids exactly the right sort of feedback and information. And a lot of things that we say in life, let alone in our work situations, are almost habitual. And so to hear someone speak a bit differently and see the good results come out of that can be really inspirational.
Yeah. When Labor canned charter schools, that was a deal with the unions, do you think?
Well, Jacinda Ardern stood up and told the public that. She said we kept our promise to the teacher unions by stopping the charter school model.
So, again, it's not about – this is the problem I'm having. It's not about the children.
No, not at all.
They're just fodder for other things, it seems, in the end.
Chris Hipkins came to South Auckland Middle School and sat across the desk from me and said, Owen, this is a very good school. how will you make sure it's still good in 5 years? And I said, well, Chris, it seems to me it could have a lot to do with you. And again, I've just spent a couple of weeks in Brazil living sort of with people and getting a handle on the country.
Isn't that a great country? I've been there. Isn't that a great country?
A lot of things to really like.
Yeah.
And to enjoy, especially the cost and quality of food.
Yeah. The beef.
But, you know, they have overt corruption problems. In New Zealand, our corruption problems, I think, have just as much effect, but they're almost hidden by social constraint. And so Chris Hipkins, Jacinda Ardern, both said to a good number of people in person, including me, that you've shown us the inadequacy of our designated character score policy. And we're going to change it, we're going to work on it, and we're going to give people such as yourselves the opportunity to do what you're doing under charter schools, but with a few more checks and balances from their perspective that would allow them to feel comfortable. Someone sent me a clip the other day of Hipkins. I hadn't seen it, talking about this in 2018, just saying the changes that they were going to bring about. And these schools could have always operated as designated character schools. Well, a lot of people had applied and been turned down by Labor governments. And so in the last 6 years under Labor, Nathan and Yvette Drury, who are about to re-begin St. Stephen's, in South Auckland, and I regard them incredibly highly as New Zealand, possibly New Zealand's best educators of Māori. Francis Valentine, who's a sort of business whirlwind, and myself all applied for designated character schools under Labor and got turned down point blank. And so, you know, when the NZEI or the PPTA or Chris Hipkins says, well, these schools could operate as designated character schools, they can't because they wouldn't allow us permission. And, you know, Chloe Swarbrick, I asked for help because she's the Auckland Central MP where I wanted the school to go for 480 neurodiverse learners, whom she says she identifies with. Well, she wrote me a really silly email which said, I won't support you in this because you've spoken out against some of my policies publicly previously, which was the policy for the referendum on marijuana, where I had said, I think this would be a very bad thing for our young people. So she wouldn't support a school that could well have been a legacy for her in Auckland Central because, frankly, she didn't like me. I thought was incredibly petty. And again, not about the children.
Yeah. That seems to be the running theme here.
It is. It absolutely is. It's just time to change all of this stuff. And be surprised at how many people, when you actually sit down and go, hey, these are the stats in New Zealand. So in that article, I point out that we've got 460 high schools in New Zealand, approximately. The top 30 schools have their leavers leaving with university entrance, which is a good proxy for all qualifications. 87% of the students are leaving with university entrance. For some of them, it's as high as 94-95%. And then the bottom 30 schools, the average is 2.7.
That's through the floor, isn't it?
It's almost a margin of error. how can, and again, as I said, there are good people, there's good leadership in almost all of our schools, but how do we have a school like Barradine, which is a Catholic school, et cetera, 10 minutes away from Tamaki College, and you see just the remarkable differences in outcomes, and how have we got to that? And it's a bit like one of the things that really did stun me in Brazil is we were at a shopping mall, and beautiful shopping mall. I don't think we've got the equivalent here. We were looking over the sort of fence, and there's a motorway, And then 50 meters behind that, there's a favela. And so you have these people who, you know, haven't got 10 cents to rub together, looking over the most salubrious shopping mall you could imagine. And we do the same in New Zealand. We can't call anyone else because our education system is just so fractured.
The reintroduction then, to sum up, what form will that take? How long will it take?
There are quite a few people basically sitting with a car revving, waiting for the opportunity to apply. I think I'm working with six groups, and I'm forming a new trust board myself for a couple of options. I mean, David Seymour, the associate minister, seems very specific about the number of schools who may have indicated that they would like to transfer from the state system. They've also been extremely discreet. They haven't dropped any names, which is a good thing. I think you have to bring a lot of integrity to this. But if there are 35 state schools that want to change over, that will be pretty immense in our system.
And it won't be long, will it, before people will be able to see the difference, I'm assuming?
I hope not. One of our issues is at the moment in New Zealand, we don't have a really solid, up-to-date assessment protocol for our primary schools. So how you tell the difference might be a little bit of a struggle. Middle schools, I think, are designed to, well, I don't think, I know. They are designed so that when a child leaves at the end of year 10, they are in great shape and with heaps of energy to go to any school and thrive in their three qualifications years. And so any middle schools should be keeping and publishing very high quality data on how their children do when they leave. And so the schools will have to report quarterly. And so, yes, you will be able to tell some metrics straight away, but these schools ought to also be able to, so should every school in New Zealand. I know that when I publish data each August about, and it's a ranking list, I guess, but just about how schools in New Zealand do with their leavers, there's probably a fair proportion of people who don't like that. Because it actually shows how they're doing with the children that come to their school, as opposed to the survivors that they have left in year 13.
Alwyn, Paul, thanks for coming on and taking us through that. It was really interesting.
Good. I appreciate it. And, again, to anyone out there who's thinking, this sounds like a good thing, can I find out if I can contribute, if I can be involved, all of that kind of stuff, I'm pretty easy to find. And there will be some good people making these schools work.
I'll leave you with the last word on that, Alwyn. Thank you for that.
My pleasure.
Like I say, really interesting. Looking forward to how it all pans out.
Okay. Thank you so much. Yeah. Be in touch anytime.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.